Well, let me ask you guys a question. It's kind of funny. I've heard many people. I've met some of your dogs. Okay. Now, some of you, when you get to see your dog, I'll ask you. So, what kind of dog? It's a rescue. It's a rescue dog. How many of you have rescue animals? Just out of curiosity. Wow, that's crazy. I had no idea. So it's interesting. So I started thinking about this whole idea of these rescue animals. Now, I'm not much of an animal guy myself, personally, even though I have three grand doggies. And, you know, we had a dog. We had a little, Mari and I had a little Pomeranian. She lived for 18 years. And many people say, you know, all dogs go to heaven. Not this one. She's burning in the lake of fire right now, I'm telling you, man. Dog would always try to bite me. Tasha was mama's little girl right there, man. And she would hide underneath the bed, you know, and I'd come up to give Mari a kiss when I'd be leaving in the morning, and she'd come out from underneath the bed just to bite my feet, you know. So in this whole idea of, we buried her underneath an apple tree. The apple tree is dead. True story. So I'm not much of an animal person. You know? I'm still in counseling. But I decided to think, you know, I was thinking about you guys that have adopted these pets. You've gone through this process, and believe it or not, there's quite a lot on, you know, the internet. I was just thinking, what do you have to do to adopt one of these little, you know, animals? And, you know, this is adopting, you know, various different kinds. And so believe it or not, there's, you know, you have to literally go through kind of like an interview process. And if you're going to adopt one of these little guys, they want to know certain things. Listen, it says right here, to ensure, this is from the Humane Society, the adoption process, what to expect. And so it says shelters and rescue groups ask a lot of questions of prospective adopters for two main reasons. Number one, to ensure long-term homes for the animals and their care. Number two, to facilitate good matches between customers and their adopted companions. So here it says questions I will be asked before adopting. Most shelters require adopters to complete an application. Listen, this is more than you have to do to have a kid, okay? It says, in addition to basic contact information, the application is likely to include questions about the following areas. Your housing situation. Renting versus owning, the number and ages of any children in your household, the number and type of other pets you may own, the name and contact information of your veterinarian, your previous experience with pets, your activity level, lifestyle, and expectations for a new animal. It says shelters and rescue groups each have their own particular approach to rehoming animals, and organizations vary widely in the amount of detail they request in their adoption process. So it says, why do they ask so many questions? Well, here's the reason why. Number one, a high-energy dog is adopted by a family that doesn't have time for extensive daily exercise. That may be you, okay? A skittish kitten is chosen by rambunctious children whose parents aren't inclined to actively supervise their kids. What would that do to the kitten? Here's another one. Didn't even think about it. Didn't know they adopted these things. A bunny with a predictable fondness for chewing catches the eye of someone who has no interest in rabbit-proofing their home. This is, I got a million of them out in my backyard. Come on over. I'll hook you up. Okay. So to prevent such painful situations for both the pets and the people involved, shelters and rescue groups carefully evaluate adopters in the hope of avoiding these mismatch relationships. So, I mean, some of you that adopted these, did you have to go through all of that to get your little guy? amazing. Here, this is from the Adopt Pet Shelter. So a few things to note. All members of the family will need to meet your potential new pet. We want to make sure it's a good fit for everyone. You must be 21 years or older to adopt. Bring a valid form of ID. If you are planning on adopting a dog and already have a dog at home, we will ask you to schedule an appointment to bring him or her, your dog, to the shelter to meet your potential new pet. You got to make sure they're going to be buddies. The adoption fee includes a routine veterinarian examination, spay, neuter, microchip, current vaccinations, gives all these different things. And so they do all the various testing on the animal. Each animal is given a preventative dewormer that is 98% effective. And so then I was curious, what does it cost to adopt one of these little guys, right? So after knowing all that, adopters will receive a $75 rebate if they complete an obedience class. So you have to pay $75 for somebody to train you to be obedient. Is that how that works? Oh, no, the dog has to have an... Okay, all right. So puppies less than 4 months old, $400. Puppies 4 months to 1 year, $350. 1 to 6 years, $300. Do you notice how the older they get, the less value they have? Senior dogs, 7 years and older, $200. Cats, now the cats are considerably cheaper. I was wondering why that is, okay? You can adopt a kitten for $125. That's interesting, from $400 for a dog. Adult cats, $100. Senior cat, $75. They pay you to take it. And so very interesting, when I was looking at, you know, what goes into adopting these little critters, and it was pretty wild, because I wanted to find out, okay, well, what happened? How do some of these animals end up in these shelters? Well, some of them are brought there by their owners. They basically have said, we don't want the animal anymore. And some of them are strays, and some of them actually have, been abandoned. So some of them have just flat out been rejected. So fascinating, I thought, okay, well, how long, because, you know, you always hear that, because you guys have all seen that commercial, right, on TV, where it's slow motion, they play really sad music. And I don't know how they get animals to look so sad, right? And so, you know, you watch. I mean, those are some of the commercials. You go, nope, I don't like animals. I'm turning this. I'm not going to look at those sad animals, you know, right there. But believe it or not, most stray animals get a 72-hour window before being euthanized. Some will get a week before if they're not rescued. If it was one that was given it, and it's kind of like a purebred animal, then they give it more time. And but man, what a process a person has to go through to just bring one home, and an expense. And those are the lucky ones, the little animals that are lucky that get to come home. And if they're not rescued, well, then, and no one wants it, well, what a bummer for the little guys, right? So, but think of the lucky ones, just for, you know, as I was tripping out on this, because we were with Kenny and Nicole, and they got this little guy that they leave at home. They go, well, we got to get home, get to our little guy. And I can remember when our dog was, you know, at home, you got to get babysitters to go to church and all that kind of stuff, right? And but think of it. Think of the lucky little dog. Somebody walks in. I like that one. They pick it out. And they go through the process, the interview process. They fill out the forms. They pay the fee. And then think of it, you guys. The dog is given a new life. The creature is given a new life. The new owner feeds it, cares for it, lavishes love upon it. And what did the dog do to deserve to be rescued? That's my question. Isn't that crazy? Nothing. absolutely nothing. In fact, some of them are there because they're little, you know, rebels. They're chewing stuff up, and they're being little bratty little animals. And so get rid of that thing, you know. And so some of them have just been flat out rejected. Some of it, you know, maybe, you know, they were abused, or maybe they were little rebels and they were, wouldn't stay home. They kept digging, you know, out from underneath their fence. A couple weeks ago, I was out on my morning walk, and I'm walking along, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I can hear this movement, and I look up, and I see this little white fluffy dog tearing straight at me with two coyotes chasing it. So he makes a beeline, cuts across somebody's front yard, and goes through the gate that he obviously snuck out of that was too big for those coyotes to get him. And I didn't see on the other side, but I was wondering if when he got inside the fence, if he was looking at those coyotes going, I think he made a beeline straight for the doggy door, right? But that was a scary thing to witness, you know? But just think about it, you know. You know, some of them just got picked up, locked away, and now what are they? They're awaiting their death sentence. Or maybe they might get to be on the commercial that we get to watch. That is until one thing happens for some. Grace. They get chosen by nothing of their own. It did nothing to deserve it. It got chosen, it got set apart, and it is dearly loved. And so that reminded me of what was happening here in the book of Colossians. You're there, right? Look at verse 9. Let's take a look. For this reason we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, being fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to His glorious power, for all patience and long-suffering with joy. So as Paul talks to Epaphras, who's the pastor of this church, as I mentioned earlier, he comes to Paul, and he wants to bring to him, he says, look, we're having some problems at the church. And so he lays out some of the problems, some of the difficulties that they're having. But he also tells them the great blessings that are happening there. And he tells Paul that, you know, one thing I will tell you about my church, Paul, it's a loving place, man. We love the Lord. We love each other. We're loving the people that are on the outside. And so basically he tells Paul, we're known in our community as a place that loves people. And what a good reputation that must be. So Paul even acknowledges that. Man, I've heard that you guys are a place that, you know, loves the Lord and you love people. And so that became the area that they were doing well. But then Paul says, I'm going to add you to my prayer list. I'm going to add this church in Colossae. I'm going to add you to my prayer list. But I want you to know, I want you to see what he does. He doesn't pray that they would have right behavior. He doesn't pray that says, I pray that your behavior would be, you know, changing. Did you catch what he asked them or what he said that he was going to pray for them for? Look what he says when we get back up to it. He says, for this reason, verse 9, since the day we heard of it, we do not cease to pray for you. And to ask that you, look at these three things, be filled with the knowledge of His will. Number two, be filled with, you will, if you will, in wisdom. And three, with spiritual understanding. When I saw that, I was kind of like, wow, that's pretty amazing. He prays for three things, that they would have a knowledge of God's will for their lives, that they would have spiritual wisdom and spiritual understanding. So in all reality, you guys, the only way that you can get those three things, the only way that that's going to happen, that's not something that just happens as a result of, you know, just being or sitting in a church service. Even though we may be able to encourage those kind of things, it doesn't happen. The only way that happens is through a relationship with Jesus Christ. That happens through spending time in His Word on a daily basis. You're not going to get those three things aren't going to happen one day out of a week. They happen as we spend time with the Lord on a daily basis, that it happens as we do spend time in fellowship, as we spend time in prayer, as we spend time in worship, singing of praise. In other words, that's an all-encompassing developing of a relationship with the Lord. And as we grow, or as we spend time in that relationship, and as we build and develop our relationship, that's why I'm such a stickler on daily devotions, is because if we don't, you're not going to grow. There are no shortcuts to Christian growth. There isn't. If there was, I would have found it, man. I'm the guy that cheated through high school. I could have found this, right? But there is no, and there are no shortcuts in this particular area. So it only happens through spending time with the Lord. And so here's what you will find, gang. As we do that and we spend time with Him, we're going to grow in our spiritual understanding. Suddenly you're going to begin to learn things. You're going to say, well, I didn't know that before. Through fellowship, we grow because we share with each other. We encourage one another. We bug each other, which causes us to pray for each other, right? And so various things began to happen in our lives as we spend that time with the Lord. As we begin and we sing worship, your heart grows closer. And so as a result of that relationship, behavior changes. That's what's such a wild thing. See, many programs that are out there, especially in the drug and alcohol world, they focus their attention on the behavior part. And you can maybe get a behavior to change for a little while, you know, if you're really disciplined and you're really strong. But if the heart's not changed, the behavior won't stay there for very long. Because our tendency is always to go back to our own selfish nature. So when our heart changes, our desires change. Our behavior follows our desire. Our thoughts change. And what's in our mind starts coming out of our mouth. And so from a right relationship with the Lord, behavior changes. So I love how Paul did this. He didn't pray that their behavior would be right. He says, man, I heard you guys are a loving place. That's so awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm going to add you to my prayer list. I'm going to ask God that you would understand His will, that you would gain wisdom, that you would gain understanding of who God is, because when you have that, your behavior changes. And so as a result of that, he says, that you then, verse 10, look what it says, may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him. Because if you tell people you need to walk worthy of the Lord by trying harder, by keeping rules and regulations and rituals, if you tell someone, you know, well, the reason that you're messed up is you need to study harder. The reason that you're finding yourself failing all the time is you're not doing. Listen, guys, I already been there, done that. So take it from somebody who's already walked down that path. The Christian life isn't about, you know, trying harder. It's about dying harder. It's dying to our old self-centered nature, spending time with Jesus, and allowing Him to make the necessary changes in us, and then through us, people will begin to see those things happen. And that's the way to true change. And that's why, you know, the places that we will support, if you will, at least the drug and alcohol rehab places, are the ones that are saying, we got to change the heart, man. And as we do that, the behaviors will change. Now, that doesn't mean you ignore behavior, but that means you focus on the heart. Make sense, gang? And so, you know, remember that for those of you that still have children at home. So, you know, as we look at it then in verses 10 and 11, you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, being fruitful in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might, according to His glorious power, for all patience, long-suffering with joy. If we preach or we teach patience, well, you need to be more patient. I know I do. But how do I get it? Give me 2 easy steps. Give me 10 steps that tell me how to be more patient. Have you guys ever tried that? Okay, well, I'll just follow these practical rules and I'll be a more patient person. You know what? I get too impatient with the steps. So the only way that we become patient is when the patient one takes over more and more of our impatient lives and he makes us more patient. Makes sense? And that is how the fruit of the Spirit begins to take place. It's fruit that develops as we stay connected and abiding in him. So it's not about religion. It's not about religiosity. It's not about trying harder. It's about dying harder. And the sooner we get that, the more freer you're going to be. So then Paul reminds them of something. After he's encouraged them, he reminds them of something. Look at verse 12. And this is what kind of got to me. Giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in the light. Look at verse 13. He has delivered us. You see the word delivered? If you're reading it out of the New King James, it says delivered. Circle that word. And it could also be translated rescued. He has rescued us from the power of darkness and conveyed us or transferred us into the kingdom of the Son of His love, in whom we have redemption through his blood and the forgiveness of sins. And that's where I kind of got hung up. Paul reminds us that they/we, if we understand what God has done, if we understand that by the building and developing of a relationship with Jesus Christ, fruit will begin to happen in our lives. Behavior will change. And so then Paul says, but let me remind you of something. Because he's done all that, you need to be thankful. We need to be thankful people. You know, I'm reminded of that parable that Jesus taught about the 10 lepers that Jesus healed. Remember the story? He heals 10 of them. They go running off. He says, go show yourself to the temple. And that would be something that would be able to be proof that they had been legitimately healed. And so they all take off running. They're excited. And I would be too. But then one of them, only one, turns around and comes back and says, I just want to say thank you. And Jesus noted it. He says, were there not 10 that were healed? And only one that comes back? I think he was a Samaritan. And so he says, only one of them comes back. So thankfulness. How many times have we prayed, Lord, I pray that you'll get us there safely. We get there safely. We forgot to say thank you. How many times have we prayed for, you know, God's blessing in some particular area and we forget to be thankful? I think thankfulness is a beautiful part of a relationship. Because in marriage, when something happens and you do something to bless your spouse and they say, hey, thank you. And remember when your kids used to say thank you? And then something happens, right? But don't you appreciate it still when your teenager comes back and says, hey, thanks for letting me take the car last night. Thanks for paying for my insurance. Am I stretching it? Am I going too far? That's too far. Okay, let me back it up then. Okay, I'm sorry. So I think that it was very interesting. He says, I want you to be thankful. We need to thank God. Why? Because he has enabled us, according to what he says right here, according to what Paul is sharing, he says in verse 12, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in the light. We have received, we share in an inheritance. Isn't that radical? Did you know that? You know, when you know we have set up, many of you have set up to leave an inheritance behind you, and so you should. We need to be responsible or else the state gets it, you know? And so, but if you've received an inheritance, you say, wow, what an amazing blessing. And yet we also have an inheritance. So what is the inheritance that we have received? Well, he tells us part of it right there. We're saints in the light. So that means that when we are saints, we are in the light. When we ain't, or when we were ain'ts, we were in darkness, okay? And it says he has delivered us from the power of darkness. He has rescued us from the power of darkness. That really is kind of part one of the inheritance. You and I were rescued from, you know, the darkness, and then we were in the kingdom of darkness, and he transferred us, or he placed and repositioned us into the kingdom of light, his kingdom of light. That's part of the inheritance that we got. We got rescued from the kingdom of darkness, taken out of that place, and put into the kingdom of light. So in all reality, if you think about this, you and I are little rescue dogs. We're very much the same, aren't we? In some fashion. Yes, even though we are greater than the animals, and I'm not here to compare us to animals. That's what the evolutionists do. I am here to tell you that you are far greater than that. And the amazing thing about it is this, that you and I were trapped in the kingdom of darkness. And so do you remember that? Do you remember the kingdom of darkness when you were once there? Fear, loneliness, rejection, emptiness, a sense of meaninglessness, a sense of no purpose. What is the purpose of my life? That fear of being in bondage. Because see, that's the crazy thing. The enemy promises freedom, but then once you're free, the coyotes are after you. It's an amazing thing. Once we get out, once we say, I'm free, then, you know, the enemy comes after you. And what is his desire? A, is either to devour us, or B, we get caught and put in the shelter where we have a death sentence hanging over our head saying, well, we're going to give you 72 hours. You may make it, you may not. But that which the enemy promised us when we finally are in, you know, in that rescue shelter or in that, you know, humane society, we find out that it's not all that humane after all. And the death sentence awaits us. There is abuse that takes place there. In that place, we just want to simply medicate the pain. Do you remember how it was when you were in the kingdom of darkness? Man, for some of us, it wasn't that far ago, or wasn't that long ago. But for some of us, maybe like you, maybe like me, like Mari, maybe it's been 30, 40 years. But man, it doesn't take long for us to think, wow, I remember what it was like. Trapped in that, what it felt like, a cage. How do I get out of this thing? There has to be more to a relationship with God than what I'm experiencing. As John said, I think that, as he said earlier here, one thing you do remember is that you can be around tons of other guys and other cages just like you, and yet you feel all alone. And so amazing. Some of you may even be feeling that way this morning. Feeling like, wow, you know, Rob, I do feel like I'm one of those little, you know, animals trapped. I feel like I'm in that commercial on the TV. I'm medicating my pain, you know, by doing maybe drugs or alcohol or pornography or workaholism or you know, I completely, you know, abandon myself to fun and to pleasure and to sports and whatever else it may be. But you know, in all reality, at the end of the day, all that is medicating the pain. It's hiding from reality. And I was the best at it. I was the greatest faker in the world. You see, the difference between me and most others, I had this conversation with another guy over the weekend, is I was a prodigal. Prodigals know better, and they do it anyway. And maybe you're a prodigal here today. Maybe you're the one that, you know, was living in the great home, and you snuck out the gate, and all of a sudden the enemy got you. And now you're trapped and going, how in the world did I let myself get into this place? And you're even more miserable because you've already tasted the kingdom. You've already been in the light. But now you're saying, man, is this what the darkness is all about? I don't want to be here any longer. Well, the amazing thing is, what I find to be fascinating, read verse 13 with me. He, Jesus, has delivered. He has rescued us from the power of darkness, conveyed us into the kingdom of the Son of His love, in whom we have redemption through his blood and the forgiveness of sin. Look at verse 19. For it pleased the Father that in him, in Christ, all the fullness should dwell, and by him to reconcile, that means to buy back all things to himself, by him, whether things on the earth or things in heaven or things in heaven, having made peace through the blood of his cross. And you who were once alienated, once enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now he is reconciled. He has cleared the account in the body of his flesh through death to present you holy and blameless and above reproach in his sight. Now look at this. If indeed you continue in the faith, grounded and steadfast, and are not moved away, and that could be also translated, do not drift away from the hope of the gospel which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, became a minister. So gang, what an amazing thing. Jesus walked into this world, this humane society, if you will. He walked into this pet shelter of which all of us at one point were locked in our own little cages. And he walks into this particular place. He agreed to the terms. He understood what the terms were. Son, if you're going to go down there and do this, you're going to need to understand that you will have to abandon yourself. You will have to be born of like them. You will have to become a child. You're going to be misunderstood, misrepresented. You'll be falsely accused, falsely arrested, falsely imprisoned. You're going to experience what they've experienced before you can redeem them. Somebody, son, are you willing to do that? I'm willing to do it. And he signed on the dotted line saying, I'm coming after you. Then he walked into that pet shelter, and he did exactly what many of you have already done. He said, I want that one. Only Jesus didn't just stop at one. He goes, I want that one. 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 And then they said, do you know how much it's going to cost for all those? He said, yes, I do. And he said, I will pay a price greater than any monetary value, more than gold or silver. He said, I'll give my own life for theirs. That's what he did for you. He paid the price. What was the price? His own life, his blood. He poured it out on the cross. He said, I'll pay in full for all of them. I want them all. Now, amazingly enough, the gates went, phew, they opened all the gates. Some of them said, no, I think I'll stay here. That's good for you, but not for me. And some of us went running into his arms where he transferred us from that tragic darkness, a place of darkness, into his glorious kingdom of light where he wants to lavish his love upon you. He wants to give you what you don't deserve. A, it was grace that caused him to come and pay for us anyway. It was grace. We did nothing to deserve it other than to say, the gate's open, I'm running to him. I want what he has to offer. Now, he tells us, he gives a warning, if, don't do what I did. Don't run out and say, well, I'm going to go see what's still happening out in the world. And I went out there and I found the coyotes chasing after me. So take it from one that did. Now, some people think, well, but Rob, look, you're back. Look, you know, yeah, but you know what? I gave the enemy plenty of ammunition to use against me later in my life. I have scars that I wouldn't have had. So don't think, well, Rob made it back. Yeah, some people don't. That's why he gives the big if and don't drift. Because he wants us to stay close to him. Listen, you want to enjoy all that the one who loved you so much that he paid for you with his own blood, enjoy every minute that you have with him. Stay as close to him as you possibly can, and from that, the fruit will begin to appear. If I can have our communion team gather up and our worship team come on back up. Lord Jesus, we thank you. Thank you for the love that you have for us. And it is my prayer, Lord, today, that each one of us that have been rescued, Lord, it's kind of funny that we begin to think that we're something special. And what makes us special is that we're living in your kingdom, and you rescued us. Other than that, nothing really special. And so, Lord, I thank you. And for some of us, we need to just remember where we came from. So pride doesn't begin to blind us. But some of us, Lord, are still trapped. And the crazy thing is, some of you that are here today, you're trapped in your little cage, but what you don't realize, the door is open. Jesus already bought and paid for your freedom. All you got to do is walk out that door and run into his arms. If you've never done that, if you've never had your sin forgiven, if you've never had the guilt lifted from your shoulders, right now where you're sitting, all you have to do is say, Lord, I want out. And I want you. Forgive me, Lord, for blindly staying in a cage that has been opened all along. Thank you for receiving me. Lord, today, may we consider the price. May we consider the agreement that you agreed to and that you paid to be able to rescue us. In Jesus' name, amen.